a major league team in a major league city. The new crew.
This is to us. This is to Columbus. This is what this is all about. Unity. Columbus. History. The future. The new era. The new crew. Let's get weird. Let's get weird. Let's get weird. And it's all because you guys like to drink beer.
Live to Awesome Town, Ohio.
You are listening to the Massive Report Podcast, your complete source of news and information for your Awesome Town crew.
And it is the Massive Reports. Good evening and welcome to it on a very, very snowy and blustery evening live from Awesome Town, Ohio. My name is Matt Goschert and this is our show brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company live at Hendox Pub. With me tonight, as always, Alex Stanek, Justin Bell, Greg Benson, Sam Fahmy back because we threatened to kidnap his children. I don't know. Something along those lines. But Sam's back with us, and welcome back to you, Sam. A lot of stuff to get to tonight, so we're going to delve right into it. The preseason is off and running and has started in earnest. The crew do not take home the giant armadillo with the six shooters from the Austin Aztecs Challenge. But we will talk about that to start off with. The first match, Friday night's match, which I was pleasantly surprised. Broadcast on Time Warner Sports. Mm-hmm. Say what you want about the TV deal. Say what you want about market penetration, et cetera, et cetera. This is the first time I can remember an actual broadcast network having one of our preseason games on television. And not only that, having two of our preseason games on actual television, not having to watch it through a grainy YouTube stream. So right. I think that was kind of cool, getting to be able to, you know, go out and watch it with other people. The crew dropped the first match by a score of 3-1 to FC Dallas. Obviously, it's preseason. Obviously, these guys are still getting the feel of each other. But, guys, let's go around the table first. For those of you who are able to watch it, your opinions on kind of our first look at this preseason crew. Alex, you want to start with you?
It was okay. I thought offensively we looked really good. Mm-hmm. Steinderson especially really impressed me. I thought he did great. Kamara looked sharp. He looked a lot more mobile than I thought he would be. I had kind of remembered him to be slower than he was. And they had good movement and everything looked good. But defensively, it was a little bit of a different story. I thought Klute had a really rough debut, he's playing with new guys in its preseason. I mean, so you can read almost nothing into these games, but he didn't really impress me. Pogatetz played well. I thought Parker's played well. Clark played well. But overall, a little bit underwhelming game, but definitely stuff to build on, and I still think it's going to be a great season.
Justin, your thoughts on the first of the preseason matches?
I don't really think you can take anything from this, mm-hmm. other than like what's their level of preparation.
Yeah,
it's kind of strange to me. Like, I think that Alex is right; the defense was ahead of the offense, which is backwards. Mm-hmm. But I mean, there's so many questions, and I don't think really these first two two games answered any of them.
Yeah. Do we have even an inkling at this point, do you think, or is it still too early?
To me, it seems like the starting lineups are pretty much, if I had to guess today, I wouldn't have changed anything from what I would have guessed 2 weeks ago. I have a lot of worries. Maybe we'll talk about this in some future podcast, but I do have worries about our forwards. Mm-hmm. I still do. I don't think I'm uncommon in that. I think one of the major factors of whether or not the season is a success is if Bedell and Schoenfeld are better.
Yeah.
I didn't really see anything that says that they are.
Yeah.
I didn't see anything that says that they're not, though. I also don't know, really. Kai Kamara does look more mobile. He does look better in some regards. But again, this, like, playing preseason, I don't really know if you can take much out of that. He's a worrisome player for me. I think that if we're putting a lot of faith in him for scoring a lot of goals. I think he's maybe a 12-goal scorer.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the best that he can do. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's going to be enough. I think Schoenfeld and Bedell are going to have to be better this year.
Well, with especially with the full team line change that we had, you know, basically we just played two different teams,
right.
First half and second half. You're not going to get in the Dallas game. We'll talk about the Austin game here in a bit, but you know, you're not going to get as much of a feel. You're going to get whether or not some of these guys maybe have gelled with each other a bit in preseason.
You know who looked good to me?
Who was that?
Grana.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He looked really good. Like he's this is something that. Like, he's going to take his opportunity seriously.
Yeah.
And I think that's, yeah, we've got a good fullback there.
I think I posted this yesterday. He really reminds me of Sebastian Miranda.
I think that's the same.
He does.
And I'm like, and if we actually get that kind of production from Grana, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah,
Sebastian
I'd be cool
Miranda
with that.
Sebastian
Miranda
was a solid right back, and he could cross the ball, and he had a ridiculous 25-yard header.
The best goal in the history of the Columbus crew.
Like seven of those this
that
year.
Was.
No kidding.
That was the
most sick guy. I still can picture that entire sequence in my mind.
Also, Duncan Outen's call of that is one of the all-time classics because he's just completely dumbfounded by what he's just seen.
Duncan thinks he's playing FIFA and somebody entered a cheat code is what's going on.
That's a 20-yard header.
That's
a 20-yard header.
To find that call.
You do. Yeah, Sam, work on that. Work on that.
Ahida.
Look, you guys took the words right out of my mouth about Grana. The guy can ball. I mean, he really is very, very good. When he has the ball at his feet, he showed a lot of prowess with being able to turn away from his opposite numbers and make passes, make crosses, and dribble very, very well. There were a few players like that we got to see technically that they're either very good or they're coming along. I think, as you guys have said, Kamara was very good the guy didn't score yet, but he was an imposing presence up front. He was getting to the loose ball first. He was making slide tackles to dispossess defenders. That's a guy with hustle in a position where we haven't really had a lot of hustle for a couple of years now. Higuain, I thought, was fantastic in the Dallas game as well. In both games, but the Dallas game particularly. Created a lot of chances and made a lot of things happen.
He had 3 shots on goal in the Dallas game and only played a half, which
is
not bad.
Speaking of Dallas, that was the game that Miranda scored his... 20-yarder header on.
Oh, it was against Dallas, wasn't it?
Finds Marosevic. Header's in!
Here I am.
Vukovic recognizes Miranda's got some space, and that is a 20-yard header to the bottom corner. That is unbelievable stuff.
It took Duncan that long to make that call because he was too busy picking his jaw up off the floor.
Yeah.
That's where the problem was there.
I love the... And I didn't notice this until just now, but Dwight Burgess, I think, called him Marosevic. He was so stunned.
Well, he did say Marosevic.
Marosevic well,
did he?
In the corner.
Yeah,
Marosevic. No. That was Vukovic.
You're right, it was.
It was Vukovic.
Because after that, I remember thinking, why is this guy not playing? Seriously, this is one of the most insane things that Robert Warzia ever did, was not play Vukovic.
He's playing for Sacramento.
Sacramento.
He's doing very well.
Yeah. I don't know why that guy is not playing in MLS somewhere. He is a very capable, quality fullback.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah, I agree completely. So on to the second match of the preseason so far, so we can touch on this. The crew play the Austin Aztecs. Most people this is kind of what everybody thought was going to happen. Obviously, our minor league affiliate, which is a weird thing to say in soccer, but it's a true statement. We beat them 1-0. Yeah, and that was that's Barson who scores the goal. But not a whole lot. There were some interesting lot of balls off the post. A lot of balls. I can tell you that Austin's keepers, both of them, really stood on their heads for that entire match.
Yeah.
And it could have been a much, much larger score line as far as that goes. Your thoughts on the match, Alex?
Well, first of all, let me go back to the first match and just say that I want to echo what everybody said about Hernan Grana. He's somebody that I think is going to be great for us, and potentially for a long time. He had a lot of issues in Argentina, from what I've heard. He made a couple of mistakes early on, and the fans really turned on him at his last two clubs. And he had a lot of trouble kind of building back that confidence. And apparently he's really, really excited to be in America, where I think he feels like fans are going to be more tolerant of the occasional mistake, which I think is true. I think in Argentina, if you make one mistake, maybe people will overreact a little bit more than they will here. But on the match, I think you could already see that things were starting to get a little bit better. Passing was a little bit more fluid. There were fewer mistakes on defense. The finishing was still lacking, but overall it seemed like the team was playing as a unit better, which makes sense. When we played Dallas, Dallas had already played, I believe, three friendlies prior to this,
okay,
and it was our first friendly. So they had had time to get in real game experience with an opposition and try to work that out as a group, whereas we hadn't had that time. I think as we get that time, we're going to start to get a better feel for how our team is doing. But early signs are good, I think.
Cool. Justin, your thoughts on the Austin match?
I think Waylon Francis looked pretty good to me.
Yeah.
Another thing, there was a couple really... I think he was one of the guys who crossed a couple passes that I thought should have been scored. One was by Bedell, who did everything right except score.
Yeah.
I mean, he put it, I think, off the left post. And then Ethan Finley also had a really good opportunity. I think one of the questions we're going to see, and it's something I would have liked to have asked Berhalter at the supporters meeting last week, but I didn't get a shot, is, you know, with all of these midfielders who are good,
yeah,
one of them is going to have to play forward at some point in time in this season. Maybe two, maybe three of them. Finley, I think, and Merrim are two guys who could do that very, very well. So that was, again, something that I don't think was answered in these first two friendlies. Another thing was, you know, you thanked Time Warner for broadcasting these. I still did not get to see them because I don't have Time Warner. You know, even though I have Time Warner cable, I had Time Warner cable. I still did not have the Time Warner cable sports channel. So.
Yeah.
Now I don't have cable, and so of course I don't have it. But the Austin Aztecs broadcast on YouTube, streamed these, and the quality was great.
Mm-hmm.
It's very nice. It's, you know, we should thank them for that because they didn't have to do that, but they did. And Austin, to me, as a soccer city, I think from what I could tell watching the DC United and the FC Dallas game following ours. I think they've got their things together,
mm-hmm.
and I think maybe we'll talk about this too, but Las Vegas was just taken off the list of possible expansion cities.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Austin is in a spot where they might be a future MLS team.
It would be really interesting, especially with three teams in Texas. I mean, not that, you know, the NBA has that. Trying to think if anybody else that I can think of. No, it's basically, yeah, it's NBA has three teams in Texas. Other than that, no other sports league does. But I think that Austin would be a really interesting... Yeah. I don't want to say a niche market because it's not that small of a city, but it's one of those things where it's like what the NBA did with Portland or what the NBA did with San Antonio, moving a professional team to a city that doesn't have professional team, like the MLS did with Columbus.
They kind of would have to fight it out with San Antonio, though, because San Antonio has been... Mm-hmm. How long has San Antonio been there? Soccer-wise.
A few years at least.
Yeah.
They've really established themselves.
Well, Austin had a team that was taken from them and became the Orlando City soccer...
Football club.
Jerks, whatever they're called. And so that's actually Austin that's playing in Orlando.
The thing about Austin is that They have a lot of similarities to Columbus, in as such that you're talking about a state capital. You're talking about a city that is, you know, a relatively decent-sized metropolis, but is also considered a college town because you got UT down there. So your culture down there is a lot more youth-oriented, a lot more progressive than the rest of the state that surrounds it, which is what Columbus is in many ways as well.
Austin's Portland, but warm. is really, I mean, that's essentially, they're very similar cities as far as all that goes. And I think it would make a lot of sense to, if you were Major League Soccer, to look at a market like that.
Yeah.
I don't know necessarily, obviously, I don't have the spreadsheets in front of me. I don't know fiscally every single thing, but it just makes sense as a market that you may want to look at if you were going into something like that. And actually, the Austin Aztecs, or the original Austin team that became Orlando City, now Lowell City FC, or whatever they're calling themselves, the new Lowell team in Kentucky.
Who's Orlando FC's affiliate,
who it would be kind of fun to face in the Open Cup, because I like Lowell. It's a fun town. Anyway, Greg, your thoughts real quick on the Austin match before we wrap this segment up.
The only thing that concerned me from the Aztecs match was that if this club, and again, I'm trying not to look at it in a way that this is what we would expect to see in an MLS regular season game, but a team that has trouble finishing against opposition that they should be beating by two or three goals may find their struggles repeating over the course of the season, and that can cost you points.
To be fair, the Post had three saves.
The Post did have three very and again, Austin's keepers were both very, very good.
And I've seen preseasons where the Crew go in and dominate their opponents in preseason, and then we have a very, very mediocre season. I've seen seasons where we lose almost every game in preseason, and we go on, and I think in 2008 we barely won anything in preseason, and then we went on that obviously the tear and won the cup. Preseason is not a litmus test for anything other than, are these guys starting to gel? And that's really the biggest thing, in my opinion, that you want to look at. What's their fitness like? Are they starting to gel?
Mm-hmm.
Who do you see that might have a breakout year? And you get to watch a little bit of free soccer.
Right.
That's really what the preseason is all about.
And I thought about that
me.
During the game. I was like, I'm trying to keep everything in perspective, but at the same time, there were so many chances. I don't have a lot of hair left to tear out.
Yeah.
So, how can you...
The Crew outshot Austin 18-0 in the first half.
Yeah. It was a shooting gallery.
They were trying. And credit to Austin's keeper, credit to Austin's D. The one where the Austin's defenseman took it off, I think it was his shoulder or something along those lines, and it went over the net. That was half luck and half just great placement.
And credit also to the magnetized paint that apparently they use on the goalposts, because just the ball was like attracted to it.
I do think that if this continues to be an issue, going back to what Justin said about having all these talented midfielders, I would listen to offers for Justin Miram at this point. And potentially get somebody who's just an out-and-out finisher. Somebody who could maybe... And then send Bedell to Austin.
Why not just play him up top?
But is he an out-and-out...
Him and Finley both played as forwards their entire college career. And they were brought in the Bobby system who forced them to be midfielders.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
Alex, you've harped on this before sometimes about Miram and his number 9. I mean, to see him play like one might silence that a little.
It might. I without being too harsh on Justin, I worry that potentially he's kind of caught between two things right now, where he's just starting to kind of break out of that, what he was when he was playing kind of as a forward for us, where he wasn't really that good of a shot and was pretty selfish. There were a lot of times I would just be screaming at the top of my lungs, pass the ball, Miram, because there'd be somebody wide open and he would be taking a shot that he was never going to bury. But it's possible now that he's matured and he's improved and that he's a better player and he's good enough. I would like to see him try in preseason, but I think if we can't find somebody, like Justin said, who is as good as Kai Kamara before the season starts, I think we need to start looking at trades.
I don't know who you're going to get, though. That's the thing. I mean, the reason why the Crew don't get like world-class strikers is because you have to pay for world-class strikers. Or even like first 11 strikers in MLS, you have to pay for them. Otherwise, you develop them. you know, thinking about, you know, the strikers who are the top of the league right now, they're all designated players, and there's a reason for that. I don't know. Kai Kamara is a question to me still. I think what he did in Kansas City, and again, we'll probably talk about this over the next few podcasts, but, you know, I keep going back to what he, that game where he took out Bernardo Anor, and that was real scary to me, that we have a player who's capable of doing that, of losing it so much that he will inflict that kind of damage upon an opponent. I don't see a real difference between, I mean, there is a difference between what happened in that instance and what Brian Mullen did to Steve Zakuani, in that one, Mullen snapped Zakuani's leg in half. Two, it was on national television. And three, Zakuani was playing for Seattle. Mm-hmm. And so that's why Mullen ended up being suspended for a significant amount. Anor did that on a game that was not broadcast on anywhere other than Columbus, basically. He did it. He only tore up Anor's knee to an extent where he was done, and then he did it against Columbus. So, I mean, he did not get a penalty for that, a suspension, I should say, for that. And I hope that he's matured a little bit. But, you know, he's gonna have to prove that.
Yeah.
I heard on a DC United podcast a couple weeks ago a real good description for Sporting Kansas City. They said Sporting Kansas City has succeeded over the last couple years by playing unethical soccer. And at first I kind of laughed, but then the way that they described it was true. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the kind of way that they succeeded, by not just, you know, I'm okay with diving here and there. I think that's gamesmanship. I think when you get to a point where you're physically trying to injure your opponent, mm-hmm. or you're putting them off their game by threatening to do that.
Yeah.
I think there's a problem there. I think that's what Peter Vermees preaches. Not just allows, but I think that's what he preaches. It's one of the reasons why I don't like him as a coach, and I hope that is not where we're going. It doesn't seem like that. I think Berhalter has a lot more integrity than Peter Vermees, and I don't think he's going to allow his teams to do that. But if that is still resonating in Kai Kamara's mind, that that's the way you win soccer games, then we are going to have a problem. I don't think we should support that, if that's the case. Now, again, these are all real, you know, this is me looking at him, his record when he was playing in MLS, you know, before he went to Norwich. But, you know, like you said earlier, he was making a lot of hustle plays in that against Austin. He was making a lot of tackles as a forward. I don't know if you need that from your forward. I really don't. You can defend, but tackling is, a lot of times you tackle because of frustration, because you're out of position, because you're trying to catch up. You know, they said that the best tackler that people have ever seen is Paolo Maldini. And the reason was because he would never had to make a tackle. He was always in position to,
well, if you
before
set your,
he had to.
Yeah, if you set yourself up where you're not in the position where you need to.
Right.
Yeah, it's I completely get where you're coming from there. Because you would hope that Kai has matured a bit since then, but like you said, and I completely get where you're coming from, but we just don't know at this point.
Yep.
And I'm hoping that question mark factor ends up being a positive, in the sense that he's not going out headhunting. But I guess he's going to have to prove that as the season goes on.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a break. It's a good point. We're going to pick that back up probably in the fourth segment a little bit, and talk a little bit more about, as we continue to talk about how the preseason is going to be going. We actually have Ken, one of our new Massive Report contributors on the writing side, who's going to come on next segment. We're going to talk a lot more CBA, and I read his article. He's a lot brighter than I am when it comes to this, so this will be a good discussion. It's coming back next, second segment of the Massive Report.
Are not just aging stars like Vila Kafka and Stevie G. Homegrown or German heroes returning to our soil, ignoring Jurgen's wishes, blood surely to bone.
It's an MLS for us. It's an MLS for us. Lots of trophies. Nope, just one. Plus a shield. It's not dumb. It's an MLS. Got no Ballon d'Or, guys, so it's your older blokes. We go Stevie Gerrard. Yep, like him. English muffin. Got to trim. It's an MLS. Don't you feel like your coach is always growling when you can't seem to score a stinking goal? Then you come over here and crowds are howling. It's enough to bring a smile to your soul. No one's there for the U.S. Open Cup games. It's a trophy, your nostrils even real. Jurgen wants you to play near the River Thames, but you need to afford your family's meals. Oh, starting squad we never see. Over here a star I'll be. No one cares for us at all, 'cause we're not great on the ball. It's an MLS. Yes, it is. It's an MLS. Yes, it is. It's an MLS.
My internal, not exactly an English major, was just screaming at the fact that they used "an" before MLS and that, yeah. And we're back. It's the Massive Report brought to you by Land Grant Brewing Company, live at Hen Docks. Come out and join us. Even if it's not snowing, you can still come. We actually, like, I think we have the biggest attendance that we've had so far in the preseason. And
it's a 2015 season record.
And it's a level one snow emergency outside. Nobody gives a damn except for the old guy at the funeral home that yells if because he has to plow his driveway. Something along those lines. Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt Goshard. We're joined by soccer dad Ken. How you doing, man?
Doing okay. Been a long time since I've had to park on campus and, you know, risk getting towed. So good to be here.
Well, welcome. Welcome to that.
Yeah.
So you had a really good piece. I read it actually a little bit before the show on Massive Report. First of all, welcome to Massive Report.
Thank you.
Welcome to the writing staff. Happy to have you and happy to have you on the show as well. Talking about the collective bargaining agreement, and for those who haven't had a chance to read it, just kind of in your own words, paraphrasing, what's the piece about and why should people read it?
Okay. What I did is I set out to try and let the soccer fans know this is the background, this is, you know, the issues, this is the reason that we're having trouble. And when I say we, you know, obviously I didn't get a tryout with the crew, but, you know, what I'm talking about is, you know, as fans of the game, we want to see games played this year. And as fans, we don't necessarily have to take the side of the players or the owners. So I tried to set out in the first part, you know, the history of the league. This is the reason they did what they did. The second part was the reason that collective bargaining agreement just will not accommodate free agency. And then the third part was me as an attorney, if I was representing one of these people, you know, this is how you could try to accomplish your goals while still not backing the league into a corner.
And you speak a lot, especially in the middle paragraphs, and I thought this was very interesting about the antitrust exemptions that professional sports can get or that certain leagues or certain employers can get. Can you just to give a little bit more background to kind of what it is, can you elaborate on that a bit?
Sure. It's not just sports leagues. I mean, as far as antitrust laws, there are, for the most part, you know, as soccer fans, what we're talking about, there are two major exemptions to the antitrust laws in the United States, and that is if you have a collective bargaining agreement or if you're a single entity. You know, antitrust law is you will not do something that is, you know, in coercion or, you know, competition, trying to suppress, you know, free market activity. So, with a single entity, you cannot be in concert with yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no one else to go. And then the second exemption is that you have a collective bargaining agreement that the employees have already agreed to. So, you know, in 2002, when the Frazier decision was announced, what the court said was that the MLS was a single entity.
Mm-hmm.
So they had that single exemption. It was kind of a weak decision, I mean, mm-hmm. to be honest, especially once you look at what they've done since then, and especially since MLS entered into a collective bargaining agreement right after they, quote-unquote, won that decision.
Yeah.
They know it's kind of weak.
Yeah, was it essentially just to kind of cover themselves? Is that?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at what the court did in the Frazier decision, they did not engage in any analysis as far as how the league actually operates in the real world.
Yeah.
And they just looked at the incorporation paperwork, said, yep, it's one, you know, LLC, a Delaware LLC, so it's one entity, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since 2002, when you have the league picking and choosing, you know, who goes where, and, you know, the league does not want to depend upon the single entity exemption anymore. Mm-hmm. So they really need that collective bargaining agreement for that second prong of the exemption. And now they don't have a collective bargaining agreement.
And the other thing, too, is that, I mean, do you expect, in order for the players union to strike, I'm under the impression that what they do is they decertify the union, because the union cannot, if there's no collective bargaining agreement, then the union basically needs to go away, and then they can, that would be a preliminary move before suing under the Sherman Act, correct?
Yes, it's kind of a complicated issue. They could strike, the league can lock them out.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't require any further action. But if the players want to go back and say, this is bullcrap.
Right.
I mean, if you look at the Frazier decision, if you look at, you know, Clark Hunt's letters and mm-hmm. stuff, they basically built this league upon the premise that we need to control the wages, we need to control competition, and that's how we're going to be viable. Clearly, that's anti-competitive.
Right.
But in order for them to go back and sue again, they would have to decertify as a union.
Mm-hmm.
So either the league could lock them out, or the players could go on strike, or if the players want to go full bore, they decertify as a union and file the antitrust lawsuit. The problem with the antitrust lawsuit is, like the original Frazier case, they filed that in 2007. The decision came out in 1997. The decision came out in 2002.
So it was 5 years.
5 years. I mean, it is not a quick process, and most of these players are living paycheck to paycheck, and there's just no viability for them to really do this.
We discussed that a bit on the last paycheck. Is it a situation where, especially with the players, a lot of these Generation Adidas guys, a lot of the guys making, you know, $50,000, $40,000 a year, is it a situation where it just gets too much to bear and they just buckle?
One of the counter arguments to that, though, is that the last CBA that they negotiated,
mm-hmm.
I remember hearing a year later how the players regretted giving up on free agency then.
Yeah.
And they said that they were basically completely unhappy with the reentry draft process, and that if they had pushed it, they could have gotten something more.
Yeah.
And so from that point on, they have been planning, preparing their members
mm-hmm.
for something that is long-term and where they would not be paid. So they might have a bit more, I would imagine they have a considerable more of a war chest now than they did in 2010.
No, there's no war chest, but your point is very well spoken, well taken. The first CBA in 2003, 2004, basically was to cover the league's ass. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what it came down to. The second CBA was, you know, 9th, 11th hour, whatever you want to call it. What this comes down to right now is the players need to understand this is not an all or nothing battle. And, you know, in part three of my article, I say these are the things that they can reasonably get as far as, you know, retaining player rights and these other things, you know, raising the minimum salaries and that sort of thing. The problem is right now when they say it's free agency or nothing, the league just will not accept that.
Now, that's also a sort of a 100% position from the league, though, that we won't accept this. And the players, so, I mean, I think that the question becomes, who are we putting that responsibility upon? I mean, the players have a responsibility to say, you could argue that the players have a responsibility to say, we are going to go for this because we know that free agency in some form is right, is a fundamental right of employment mm-hmm. in the United States as a professional. And the union, the ownership can say no. And they have a business model that defends that. I don't know if my question would be, are the players in as bad a position as it seems like the ownership and many of the people who kind of take the MLS side, are they in really that bad of a position, considering that the market is global? A lot of these players will not get picked up by other teams, but a good number of them will. So are they in truly a lose position if they do strike and the league does lose a season?
Well, I mean, if the players strike, they still don't own their rights. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that's really what we're talking about here, okay? You know, when the players are talking about free agency, what they're talking about is owning their right to go someplace within the United States. There's only one league in the United States, and as LA owns their own, you know, USL team, and you know, as we start having foreign teams, that's going to even get worse. So what we're really talking about, the point I make in my article is the label free agency, you should completely discard it. Let's look at the quality of life issues. Do you own your own player rights? If you get drafted, if you get traded, do you have some input into that? And that's what I'm talking about. You know, free agency is completely incompatible with a single entity model. And the players could instead say, hey, you know, I've played 5 years, I should be able to retain my player rights. Or I've been involuntarily drafted, so, you know, in return for me agreeing to that once, I now retain my player rights. And then maybe on the league rosters, there's one roster spot, you know, starting in the first year of the new CBA, where the other teams could get one of those players that owns their own players' rights, and then 2 years later that expands to two roster spots or something like that. The league's point, and again, I am not taking the players' side or the league side. The league side is they have seen so many soccer leagues crash and burn from the spending wars. So the league's concern is about, you know, the LA Galaxy, the Seattle Sounders, you know, the two New York City teams, the new Orlando, you know, all these people that have checkbooks. They could just come in and write checks for veterans and just buy them off the crew. You know, we have this wonderful academy system, and now we put all this money into the academy, and now they just come in and write a check after the second year or whatever. So there's a balance that can be struck. And The league will not go away from a single entity model, not that it needs to, but they're going to lose that antitrust exemption. They are. They're going to have a collective bargaining agreement that lets these players start to regain their own player rights. And as an attorney, what we talk about is ignore the labels, focus on the goals. So if we have a goal of let's start to regain our own player rights, we can do that. You know, that's something that on an incremental basis that will not threaten the league, that will not make them think they're going to be thrown off the cliff. That's something that can be accomplished.
I think it's interesting to the point that you were making. It's a point that I've heard as well, that the league is worried about spending wars that have happened in previous and about out of control spending. And then you look at a lot of these blind allocations. You look at a lot of this designated player money that's being dropped, and that's exactly what's happening. It's they're not going out and buying the entire Columbus Crew Academy, but they are going and buying however many players from Europe they want. Not going through the allocation system, not going through all that, and I think that's a really weird thing for me, and I don't see, and maybe it's just because I haven't studied this enough, but I don't see a difference between that and what the league says they're trying to avoid by not giving into some of these player demands.
No, and I point this out in the article. I mean, the league's salary, first of all, there's no such thing as a salary cap in the MLS. It's complete BS. Like you said, they allocate, they have this allocation money, buy down, designated player, generation Adidas, and all this other crap. I mean, it's
Garber bucks.
Yeah, Garber bucks. Yeah. I don't know if the website dared to publish the things I said, but yeah, it's absolute crap. Going through the background for this article, I talked to agents that represented MLS players, and then I talked to agents that did not represent MLS agents. And what they said was, what the hell are you guys doing?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way. I mean, the single entity model can work, but there needs to be complete above board, one rule. Everyone, complies with it. There's complete financial transparency, and that's not what happens in the MLS. And that's the reason the MLS does not want to have the players decertify and go back, because that Frazier decision just absolutely will not stand, because it's not a single entity. I mean, they're allocating league revenues, league salaries, all this other stuff, completely different depending upon what team you're in.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is that the Frazier decision was pre-Beckham rule, pre-designated player.
Yeah.
And so that is sort of almost is like the bright, shining lie at the center of the single entity argument. That, yes, some of these teams, they are competing against each other.
Yeah.
I read your article. I want to say I read the first part of your article today. It was great, and I'm looking forward to the second one's coming tonight, I believe, right? Is that correct?
Second one is tonight. Third one is in a couple of days.
Cool. Okay.
Cool. Very, very cool.
So, follow up to who people are listening. Follow up by catching all three parts of the article.
Yeah.
They're pretty long, but they're pretty extensive.
It's well written. It's very well written.
And my apologies. Ordinarily, my diction and writing is better. I had a family emergency this last week, and I read some of the stuff this, once it started publishing, and I wish I'd put a comma there or a semicolon or whatever. But
I wish I would have written it in English.
You could probably slip some extra punctuation in there. I don't think anybody's going to notice.
But, yeah, I mean, for a blog article, it's all laid out. I mean, it's all laid out there. And part one is the history of the league. Part two is the reason that free agency just will not work. and part three is what the league, what the players can do to actually accomplish. I mean, the players are looking for quality of life improvements, and that's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
And none of us object to that. But you can obtain quality of life improvements without doing, without trying to borrow wholesale from the NBA or the NFL, you know, as far as free agency or whatever. Like, own your own player rights. Okay, once you get traded once, no more. I understand that. I mean, I've got two kids, you know, a wife. I wouldn't have to move, you know, across the country just because someone said I should or something like that. The players can accomplish incrementally what they're trying to accomplish without putting the league on that precipice that the league feels is going to be there.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a really interesting season, or a really interesting remainder of the preseason. I'd love to have you back to kind of discuss this as more information comes becomes available. Mm-hmm. If more information becomes available. If not, we'll still have you on, and
yeah, we can,
we'll speculate till the cows come home.
Isn't that what we do anyway?
We'll come in and we'll come in and talk hockey.
Yeah, that sounds good. We'll just talk, and that's the thing. This podcast, if there's no season, this podcast is all Blue Jackets all the time until about mid-April, and then we're going to talk about, I don't know, the Cubs, something like that. We'll just have my girlfriend on, and we'll talk we'll talk Cubs baseball. Or the Clippers. We'll talk about the Clippers. I think that makes more sense.
Something local.
Something local. So
curling. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Ken. It's an awesome article, and I'm happy happy that you are joined the staff and are, are writing this for us.
Yeah, welcome aboard.
Yeah, welcome aboard,
Thank you.
We'll have you back again. We're going to come back. We're going to talk some more crew, talk a little bit more preseason. It's all coming up next. This is the Massive Report.
Maria's not an asset to the Abbey.
I'd like to say a word in her behalf.
And say it, Sister Margareta.
Maria makes me laugh.
How do you solve a problem like Maria? How do you catch a cloud and pin it down?
How do you find a word that means Maria?
Flippity-gibbet, a will-o'-the-wisp.
A clown.
Many a thing you know you'd like to tell her. Many a thing she ought to...
Guess who's back? Back again. Greetings, Card Sharks. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 1 of Cards Against Insanity, my own little corner of the Massive Report. Where I do a systematic tongue-in-cheek takedown of all the transgressions going on in the world of soccer and beyond. Opinions, as always, are mine and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of Massive Report or Columbus Crew SC, which stands for Soccer Club, just in case you didn't know, or in case you had friends who didn't know and thought it stood for South Carolina, or... yes, that too. Or if they don't really think that it stands for something else, you're just saying that they do to fit the narrative. Sorry, guys, SC is like napalm. It's going to stick. First cab-colored card off the rank goes to Italian Serie A referee Paolo Valeri. I do tend to poke fun at La Calcio from time to time, and then I give it a rest for a while, and then this happens. During yesterday's trip to AC Milan, Empoli defender Mario Rui managed to kick the ball up off the ground and into his own face while battling with Milan's Alessio Cerci. Yep, up off the deck, right into the mush. But he's not getting the yellow card. Rui fell down, no doubt a little shaken up. Referee Valeri promptly gave Empoli a free kick. Poor Milan, even when it's the other guys who screw up, they still can't win. And they didn't yesterday, it finished 1-1. Yellow card to... Alex is giving me dirty looks.
I don't want to talk about it.
Yellow card to cricket streakers. Cricket streakers. The Cricket World Cup began last week. Yes, the Cricket World Cup is a thing. Australia and New Zealand are the co-hosts because when your sport takes 5 days to play, you've got some time to travel. Actually, I'm being completely unfair and self-deprecating there since World Cup matches are one-day games. But it doesn't do much for the reputation of the sport when both opening matches featuring the host nations, and won comfortably by those host nations for the record, were interrupted by pitch invaders wearing naught but tennis shoes, which means they could have been in a late 90s porno for all we know. Or maybe they just weren't planning on streaking, they just needed to strip down to deal with the Aussie weather, which I am being constantly reminded about by all my friends and family back home, and I'm looking at a blizzard right now and a level 1 snow emergency, and I hate you all for it.
Yellow card to Blackpool FC. They make a return to the program for their field conditions for Saturday's match against Nottingham Forest. The stadium, ironically called Bloomfield Road, didn't see anything blooming as the pitch was a mess of dirt and divots. These guys were in the Premier League a few years ago, need I remind you. It was so bad that Mike McGee sent them a business card for the groundskeepers at Toyota Park. Yellow card to Max Bretos. Hat tip to our own Justin Bell for unearthing this one. Thank you, sir. You might know Max from SportsCenter and ESPN FC, but on Saturday he tweeted a picture of a shirtless and more tattooed than usual Zlatan Ibrahimovic, fresh off scoring the opening goal for PSG in their match against Cannes. Max tweeted, quote, "Zlatan looks like he fell asleep in a kindergarten," unnecessary comma, "and the kids went to town with their crayons," end quote. Yeah, the doodles Max was referring to were the names of 50 starving people being helped by the United Nations World Food Program. Zlatan went on after the match to talk about the 805 million people in the world suffering from hunger and to raise awareness for the World Food Program, but hey, let's not let a good cause get in the way of a dig on Twitter, right? But because I can't let this one go, yellow card to PSG's English language social media crew, who made a Twitter snafu of their own late in the same match. Up by two with just 3 minutes left to play, but playing with only 9 men because of injuries, the club tweeted, quote, 87-minute PSG forced to park the bus, shout out to Jose Mourinho, in the final minutes, hashtag PSGSMC, end quote. It was an obvious dig against Chelsea, who PSG play in the Champions League tomorrow. What is it they say about one game at a time, guys? Sure enough, 2 minutes later, goal to Cannes, 2-1. 3 minutes later, second minute of injury time, sacre bleu, it's another goal to Cannes, and it finishes 2-2. Now granted, I made a similar mistake on Saturday during the Bayer Leverkusen-Wolfsburg match, tweeting the Bayer had just tied the score when Wolfsburg got the winner just seconds later, but I don't have 6,000 followers. Really? Only 6,000 English speakers follow PSG on Twitter? That seems low. Very low. Yellow card to the Penn State basketball fans who chanted no means no to Des Wells of Maryland as he was lining up for a free throw during a game on Saturday. A little background here. Wells was kicked off the Xavier University team in 2012 amid allegations of sexual assault. So apparently he's fair game to fans of a college which covered up a child molestation scandal within their own institution, inside their own facilities, in the name of protecting the precious win-loss record and the revenue that a successful college sports program brings in this country. A school whose very mission is supposed to be the caring and well-being of children and young adults, which allowed those children to be violated over a period of 15 years and then covered it up because wins and dollars were more important. So Penn State fans, congratulations on not only being the most disgusting, reprehensible hypocrites in the sports world, but also for making an alleged rapist look like a victim at Saturday's game, which you lost, by the way. But for giving a guy who we think of in the same way as Jameis Winston and Ben Roethlisberger the moral high ground, you get a second yellow and you're off. Your school sucks and so do you as people. Go away. On a lighter note, yeah, I didn't want to end it on that one. Yellow card to Dave, is it McGeachan? 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 I don't have no idea. He's Scottish. He's a linesman working yesterday's Scottish Premiership match between Aberdeen and homeside Hamilton. Aberdeen were leading 2-0 and it should have been 3 when Adam Rooney, no relation to Wayne, his shot hit the underside of the crossbar and bounced at least a foot and a half over the line in the Hamilton goal before bouncing back out. Replays and still photos show just how far this thing crossed the line by, but in shades of England v. Germany at the 2010 World Cup, McGeachan declared that the ball had stayed out. See, I get it wrong every time. Declared that the ball had stayed out and the referee signaled play on. Aberdeen did eventually get their third goal for a 3-0 away win. But don't feel too bad for McGeachan. It's hard to tell when you've crossed the line in Hamilton. Just ask Matt Goshard every time he goes to dinner with his girlfriend's parents. I could end it on that note, but I'm not going to. Finally, you can listen to the podcast in the morning. And finally, red card. And finally, red card to All-Star Games. We just got done with NBA All-Star Weekend in New York City, and a few weeks before that, the NHL All-Stars finally came to our humble yet awesome city. A good time was had by most. Major League Baseball claims the inaugural All-Star Game held in 1933 is an exhibition that formed part of the Chicago World's Fair. Early the following year, the NHL put on a benefit game for Toronto player Ace Bailey, who had suffered a career-ending injury a few months prior. It would become an annual event in the NHL beginning in 1947. The NBA put on its first All-Star game in 1951 to try to bring positive attention to the sport, which had been rocked by a college point-shaving scandal the previous year. And that same year, the NFL introduced the Pro Bowl in its current format, presumably not to be left out. MLS had an All-Star game in its first season because, hey, every other sports league in North America does this. Why not? And that's pretty much the only reason they continue to exist anymore. All-Star games were introduced when the concept meant something. When the idea of showcasing the talent in your league was still a novelty to many of your consumers. When it was part of a bigger event or a higher purpose. Before it became played out with gaudy jerseys, i.e. merchandise-based cash grabs. Mail-in ballots and picking teams like you're in the schoolyard. Sorry, fantasy drafts now. I have to use the correct term. The concept is old and tired and I don't care anymore. And a lot of people seem to agree. The Sports Nation poll last night asked which of these is your favorite NBA All-Star Weekend competition. Between the dunk contest, the three-point contest, and the game itself, 21% said the game. The other 79% were split pretty evenly between the other two options, but it seemed like they don't care, or at least they don't care that much. NHL All-Star Weekend, crowd in the Arena District here in Columbus for the Saturday night skills competition dwarfed that of the crowd in the same part of town for the Sunday afternoon game. It would have been the most disappointing event of the day if the Royal Rumble hadn't been on later that night. The Pro Bowl, yeah, we're done with that mess. The ratings for the 2013 Pro Bowl, there was a one in there. 2013 Pro Bowl rating, 7.7. 2014, 6.7. 2015, a game which came down to virtually the final play, 5.6. Yeah, we're done. Last year's MLS All-Star Game looks to be an exception to the rule on the surface. Second best ratings for the event ever. Bigger TV audience than the Man United-Real Madrid game in Ann Arbor. Not too bad, right? Let's just pretend that the fact that it was 3 weeks after a World Cup final and that the domestic champions from the World Cup winning side were in town had nothing to do with it. We're done. We're over it. The only people who benefit from these things anymore are the host cities. And half the pro leagues seem to rotate between half a dozen cities anyway, which means everyone else either gets screwed out of the deal or doesn't care enough to stick their hand up and say they want a piece of the action. We don't care about the score. We don't care about the game. The fan vote skews everything, making it a popularity contest and not a true showcase of the league's talent. And like virtually every other sports tradition, we only do it because we've always done it. Or in last night's case, it meant that I missed an auto-tuned Kanye West at the Saturday Night Live 40th anniversary event. Okay, I think I found that higher purpose after all. My name is Greg Benson. You can find me on Twitter as Gregulator614, Facebook as That One Guy Greg, and if you're at Hendox Pub, you're in my seat. Play on, but remember, especially in Hamilton, I'm watching you. All right, guys, we're back. It's segment three of the Massive Report. Couple of things. It's kind of our laundry list segment. We got a couple of things to touch on here. First of all, from the entire Massive Report crew, at least I assume, congratulations go out to Brian McBride, making the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame. Very cool,
yeah.
As far as that goes. Not a whole lot to talk about there. I mean, it's kind of, you assumed that was going to happen at some point.
Yeah, totally.
Alex, you looked like you had some,
no.
You looked like, well, you had a counterpoint to that.
No.
Screw Brian McBride.
No. Brian McBride is probably my favorite MLS player of all time. I loved him even after everybody was like, "Oh, he's, you know, committing treason, whatever." He was the player for me when the crew first came to Columbus, and he was the guy who really kind of got me interested in soccer initially, and.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so happy to see him there. If it was a one-man committee, he would have been in there like as soon as possible. But
mm-hmm.
I think this was the first chance he was eligible, was it?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so awesome. So,
yeah, congratulations to him from the entire staff. Second thing that I wanted to touch on, and I'm going to kind of leave this one open to you guys a little bit more. I was unable to attend, but the crew did have a supporter summit, mm-hmm. and I wanted to kind of, for those of you who were able, I think everybody else at the table went except for me. Is that correct? Sam didn't go? Well, Sam, then you don't count. You were watching basketball.
No, I was shooting basketball.
You were shooting basketballs at a hoop.
No, I'm covering a basketball game.
So I wanted to. The first thing I wanted to talk about, just because I know Justin, you've kind of been a little bit more on the kind of the inside of all this. The Nordeca is going to have a supporters council this year, and if you want to kind of explain a little bit more about that. For those who haven't heard about it yet, I think it's a good topic to at least make people aware of.
Yeah, I think it's a really good thing. I think we tried to do something similar to this in maybe about 4 years ago, three or four years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it did not take off for various reasons. But I think that what's happened since then is that we've kind of shown that in order to do certain things, we need to have something that's outside of the supporters groups.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's not only that only includes them, but also sort of precludes them. That mm-hmm. says that you can have, there are just some things that just they're not good at. Mm-hmm. And this is the way to do these things. I think we've shown it through a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
And this is going to be really good because I think it puts everybody sort of on an even playing field. And it allows people who, this is one of the things that I am most passionate about. It allows people who have felt like they can't be a part of leadership or involved in actually doing things, it allows them the opportunity to be a part of leadership and to do things. And it sort of allows us also to get away from this thing that I think has been kind of an anchor around the neck of Columbus Crew supporters getting things done, which is sort of the legacy leadership.
Mm-hmm.
This is going to allow us to bring new people in to let them have an impact of their own, and also show that look, there's a lot of talent in this fan base, and the only way that they get a chance to utilize that talent is if they're given a chance, and so this is going to be the way to give them a chance, and also we have established a sort of a really good rapport with the team,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to help each other.
Yeah,
and that's something that needs to happen as well. Is the fans and the team need to help each other? They need to work together.
Yeah,
and not be dictated one to the other, or not have this bizarre mistrust that sort of crushed everything at random, inopportune times. So we're gonna work this out, and it's gonna work really, really well.
I think, and one of the things, just going to a lot of the TIFO sweat events and things along those lines that happened last year, is that there really isn't. Yes, obviously you need somebody who's, you know, we're gonna show up at this time, and we're gonna, you know, people are setting things up, but I think that it was not as. I'm trying to think of the best way to convey exactly what I'm saying here, but there was an opportunity for people to lead who weren't necessarily the people that you normally saw leading, and I think that those additional voices and that I think really helped to grow that that movement last year and before that as well, but I think last year is really kind of where it took off. And I think that it's going to be really interesting to see how this all plays out and how this all works out this year with the Supporters Council. Correct me if I'm wrong, nominations are up right now?
Yeah, I think that I'm not exactly sure how this is going in the last couple of days because I've been a little distracted. But the nominations should have been compiled and should be ready to go. There's a Twitter page that you can follow supporters. What is it?
It's at Support Council, which I'm kind of weirded out that wasn't taken by some sort of, you know, crisis hotline or something along those lines.
Support
but I'm,
Council.
I'm is glad that,
it sounds British.
It does. Support Council.
Support Council.
To me, it sounds like an instruction from 1984. It's like, Support Council!
Yes.
it looks like...
And also something else that starts with SC, Greg.
Oh, yeah. Support Council. That's what it is. Columbus Crew Support
South
Council.
Carolina, South Soccer Carolina. Club.
Soccer support Club.
Steve Clark.
Steve Clark.
Mm-hmm.
Senior College. I have no idea.
Is that a real thing?
State College.
I think, would make more sense. The Supporter Council nomination form is still up on the Twitter page at Support Council. So if you know anyone who you might be interested in nominating... please do so, or if you're Tony Galifo, you can nominate yourself.
Yeah,
that's another thing. That's
go
that's,
Tony.
Go Tony. No,
just to throw
good old sweatpants.
just to throw my two cents in on the support council thing is that what I think this does is it provides an opportunity to get away from some of the partisanship that has prevented some people from wanting to participate in crew supporter events before.
Mm-hmm.
Not because of any one particular person or any one particular supporters group or anything like that. I'm not singling anybody out, although if you're thinking, is he talking about me? Maybe you need to look at yourself for a while.
You know, those guys in Murderers Row.
Yeah.
By the way, I want to say something about Murderers Row.
Oh, so, yeah. So, like, tell the story.
The Murray brothers are two of the greatest people I've met. But they're very passionate. And I don't know how to put this, but someone came up to me from at the supporters meeting. And someone from the crew, I'm not going to say who, came up to me and said, you know, about 3 years ago, those guys were seen as like this huge security risk. Where like they were planned. They were plans to like, how are we going to deal with them kind of thing. He's like, but they're actually like really great guys. I was like, yes, what do you think, you know? And like the sort of, that's what I was talking about earlier, like the mistrust between things.
The Murray brothers stab a family in the parking lot?
No.
I don't know. I'm just asking questions, Justin.
No.
I'm just asking questions.
The best thing that I think I've ever seen, well, I'm not going to say what that is, but no, they're great. And they're great.
Well, you said whoever it was, the person who came up to you was a he. I was thinking it was Erica Kress for some reason.
It wasn't Erica. But it was... Another is one of the really great people who worked for the crew. Who actually, you know, Clark Beacom. it's great because I think we're seeing, you know, the people who work for the crew are people who maybe have mistrusted them and the mistrust for the certain fans. It's those walls are being teared down, and it's like basically the sky's the limit. If that's possible, we're like all systems go, thrusters firing, blah blah blah.
I think it's awesome. This is something that I've been kind of hoping would happen for a long time. I felt for a while that as a supporters, not just a group, but as Columbus supporters, we were almost on like a hamster wheel where we were trying to move forward, but we would never quite get there. And I think we've seen from Tifo Sweat that if you get a bunch of people who have the energy to do something together in a room, people have ideas and people have the enthusiasm to turn those ideas into a reality. And I think it's fantastic. I think we're going to get a great group of people, and I can't wait. I really think this is. I don't even think people realize how big of a change this is going to make over the course of a couple years. I think it's going to be night and day.
Alex Stanek for Supporters Council.
Yeah, I think
you've heard it here first. Yeah. I will be your campaign manager.
Thank you.
It'll be fantastic.
I think the Supporters Council was the discussion about it, at least, and the fact that we're still talking about this in a positive light, like this is something that's moving in the right direction, was emblematic of the overall mood at the Supporters Council. Mm-hmm. Because
Summit,
Summit. My bad.
No, yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm lived in Ohio too long. I don't know what a summit is anymore.
It's that street,
right?
It's that street. Rubies is on.
It's the street that's on the biggest hill in this neighborhood, which says a lot. But no, the overall mood at the supporters summit, compare it to 12 months ago when, you know, the ownership was new, the coaching staff was new, and everybody was sort of, gee, we don't know what to expect from this group.
Yeah.
To look at where this team is headed now and where we as supporters, to the point that even when the most remotely negative thing was brought up, it was almost instantly shot down. And I'm not going to say what it was because you can probably already guess what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It was the cost of soda in the stadium.
Thank you for removing all ambiguity. Yeah, who's going to be on the souvenir cup?
Yeah,
concessions this year.
That was the biggest concern.
But like even the parking issue.
Yeah.
I think the crew are really knocking it. I told this to Andy Lognane after the meeting. I was like, they're just in Clark Beacom again, mm-hmm. was there, and I'm trying to think who else was there. But they're really just knocking it out of the park. And the reason I think that they are is because they're not denying that there have been issues. Mm-hmm. They're facing them and they're confronting them and they're trying to fix them. And they're also not minimizing those complaints. They're taking them seriously and they're saying, yeah, you know, let's work. We're going to figure out a way to fix this. Even last, you know, you brought up last year, the way that Anthony Precourt handled the television thing, I thought in that supporters meeting where he said, you know, yeah, this, I understand, like this is a problem now, and he gets it. It's what those are his exact words. I get it.
Yeah.
And we all believe, yeah, you do get it. And what a difference that is from where things were.
There is a huge culture right now that Anthony Precourt and the rest of the guys, I think, have developed within this club, and it's continuing, and it's going even more in that direction of just honesty and as much transparency as you can have.
It
is a private business. No one's going to be like, you know, oh yeah, here's our gate receipts from last year. You know, there's right. that, and you wouldn't expect that. But the transparency that there is astonishing compared to what it was under HSG. And I think that there's, you know, like you were talking about with the parking issue, like people have talked about, some people ad nauseum, Jim Bach, about the television deal.
Friend of the show before we...
My old roommate, I could throw him under the bus.
Right.
But, you know, there are some issues, but just like you said, it seems like they're working on that stuff. It seems like they're trying, you know. Yeah, you're not going to be able to solve all those problems in 24 hours. You're not going to be able to solve them in a year, you know.
And compare that to the way that the New York Red Bulls handled their meeting, which everyone talked about and said, why don't other teams do this? And, you know, yeah, we've done it forever, but we also do it right.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, you watch that supporters meeting, and that's all they did was try to obfuscate and sort of deny that something was happening or try to massage the answers.
Yeah. And that's not genuine. And your supporters will, if you're being genuine, even if they don't like the answer you're giving, most 99% of people will at least acknowledge that you're being genuine and at least give you the opportunity to state your point. When you're not being genuine, people tend to shut you off. And that's why, going back to the bike rack issues or the things that we had back a couple of years ago, you know, and not just with Mark McCullers, but with other members of the staff that either aren't there anymore or who have kind of changed things around a little bit. Those issues, there were no genuine answers given, and it was essentially there was a level of respect that just wasn't there. And I think there is that level of respect. You have to have a level of respect in any business for your customer, and when your customer is passionately invested in your business, you have to have an even higher level of respect, because if you don't, they'll call you out on your bullshit every single time.
I think one thing that's really changed, and I think as fans, we've always been really enthusiastic and really passionate about improving things.
Yeah.
But I think maybe with HSG, at least towards the end of it, maybe there wasn't so much that sense of we need to make things better. It seemed, from my perspective at least, that it was a lot more we need to keep things going at the same pace. They were more concerned about keeping things the same and keeping things flat as opposed to trying to make it go up or down. And I think they were afraid of it going down so much that they wouldn't risk it going up.
It's really well put.
Yeah, I agree.
So we've always, as fans, been passionate, and we've always had the enthusiasm to make things better, and we've always had kind of the drive to make everything about what we do better, from top to bottom. And now we have a front office that supports us and is willing to give us a little bit of slack and willing to say, hey, go try this. You guys think this will work? Go give it a shot. We are behind you 100%, and that changes everything.
Yeah.
I go back to this all the time. It's the fact that these guys have come in, whether it's, you know, Precourt in particular, did not come from a position of sports ownership in the past.
Yeah,
and so there's no preconceptions. There's no, you know, this is what I should probably expect of my fan base. This is, you know, a guy who just made his money, came in, and, you know, this is his first, you know, first swing at the pinata, and this is his, you know, this is his education.
I think that's one of those things that we should, like, should we ever get him on the podcast, is now that he has a full year under his belt, is how he came around to a lot of these things. But one thing that really points out how this is a different group is, you know, if the jersey would have leaked like it did the previous time, they would have just not said anything about it until the reveal, and then revealed it as if nobody knew anything. This group just embraced it. They're like, jersey leaked? All right, screw it. We're just going to run with it.
Yeah.
You know? And they made a party out of it.
Yeah.
and more encouraged. I bet there. I would love. This is the time where I'd love to see what their sales spike was.
Oh.
From the time it showed to the time they just were. You know what? We're just going to celebrate this, and we're going to.
I bought one and put drop it twice on the back.
So. Was that drop it with the number two?
What?
Was
no, I just wrote it out.
Just
wrote it out. Yeah. Oh,
okay. Not drop it. Mm-hmm.
Drop it twice. Yes.
Did you get enough characters?
I know people. I can get 11 characters on the back of a jersey.
Yeah. I got what I always get on mine.
Bell one.
No, I got
Urso 15.
Urso 15.
Oh, okay.
No.
I was about to say Discord 10. No, wait.
No. That's national.
Well, he doesn't put Discord on the back anyway. He puts Mix.
I put Discord on it.
I know.
All right.
The other thing.
Oh, go ahead.
No,
go ahead, Justin.
I was going to say the drop it twice. Do we want to talk about that?
We should. Yeah, we should.
You know what? Let's start the.
Okay. Start the next segment with that. All right. So this is a tease in radio. We call this a tease.
I would like to say, since we started the thing about Brian McBride, I just want to say that my favorite Brian McBride memory was happened in, I believe it was November of 2008. I remember where I was. It was very. It was kind of chilly, and something was happening. I can't remember what.
It was a mostly full stadium.
It was mostly full.
It wasn't even sold out.
We were all pretty happy.
It was on ESPN, I think.
And I think he was wearing red, if I recall.
He definitely did not drop it twice.
He done got dunked on, son.
Still love you, Brian.
All right, we're going to talk about Drop It Twice. We're going to come back. We'll talk about that. And the crew are going to Florida.
A Hall of Fame ring, Brian, because you don't have an MLS Cup ring.
Still love you, Brian.
We'll be back in a second. It's the Massive Report brought to you by Land Grant Brewing.
My name is Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Wherever I go, people recognize me. Call my name. Cheer for me. But there are names no one cheers for. Carmen. Rahma. Antoine. Lida. Chewy. Mariko. If I could, I would write every single name on my body. But there are 805 million people suffering from hunger in the world today. Too many of them are children. They are struck by war, natural disasters, and extreme poverty. I have supporters all over the world. Beginning today, I want this support to go to the people who really need it. So whenever you hear my name, you will think of their names. Whenever you see me, you will see them.
Skin. Been saved, the warm of the waves,
I felt a slip into a watery grave. Oh, 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 oh.
And we're back. It is segment four, The Massive Report, brought to you by Land Grant Brewing. We went out of the last segment with Zlatan Ibrahimovic explaining kind of what was up with the words all over. And Justin, you were talking a little bit more about this. Do you know the website that trying to get people to go to donate?
Real quick, go to www.wfp.org.
Cool.
And you can donate money to what that was all about.
Mm-hmm. Feeding children?
Feeding people around the world.
That's a good
thing.
Not
just children, but people who are around. Mostly kids, but...
You know, well, either way, I like the idea of feeding people that don't have food.
Right.
That seems like a good thing to do.
Yeah.
So, good on him for doing it and raising awareness for it, and good on the website, and hopefully people will go and donate whatever they've got.
Alex mentioned this during the break, and I thought I'd bring it to the attention on the mic. Obviously, Zlatan took his shirt off during the game, which is an automatic yellow card. Mm-hmm. In any league anywhere in the world. Yellow card accumulation means he misses a big league match next week, and he knew going into it that was going to be the case, so did it anyway as you know, what I thought was a very, very cool gesture.
Yeah, and they're 2 points down in the league right now, so it's a huge game for them. But yeah, he for the people who haven't seen the video, he like covers his body basically in these temporary tattoos of the different names of the people who are without food. And if you go to their website, they have a section about this campaign. I think it's the 805 million, yeah, names, I think is the hashtag, something like that. Well, but you can actually go there, and the names of the people that are on there are real people, and you can go there and you can kind of see their stories. It's a really, really cool campaign. Yeah. And good on them for doing it.
Yeah, well, hopefully it helps to bring more attention to it, because obviously it's a worthwhile cause. So going from that into Drop It Twice, which we teased in the last segment. We got to talk about Drop It Twice, Justin. So,
By the way, I believe that Morgan Hughes uploaded the Supporters Summit video.
Okay, cool.
On YouTube, we'll get a link to that. We'll tell you what the link is once we find it. But on there, there's a big explanation for what Drop It Twice was. Which, if you were on Twitter or anywhere. Social media wise, a couple weeks ago, you started noticing that a lot of us started tweeting out "Drop It Twice," and what happened was there's a something that kind of sprung up between the crew front office and some of the supporters, and a local band named Kid Runner, is a very good local band, decided to come up with a new, not necessarily an anthem, but a new sort of sound, song or bit of music for the soundtrack that starts a game at Crew Stadium.
Like an intro song, essentially.
Yeah, and it's really cool. They did a very, very good job. So in the meeting where they were introducing that concept to us, to a handful of people, I think it was maybe 12 people, from different supporters groups, Greg Berhalter was there, and he was kind of leading the discussion. He did a very good job. I never knew that music criticism was his thing, but it really is. And but during that, we listened to the song on the stadium speakers,
mm-hmm.
and you know, it was nighttime and there was no one in there, and it was playing out of the scoreboard. It sounded really great. There's a portion of the song where the beat drops,
mm-hmm.
and everyone kind of got chills up their back when that happened. It sounded really cool. So we go back in, we started having the discussion, and Greg Berhalter is leading the discussion, and we all started saying like how we really liked it. We really liked it when the beat dropped. And so the discussion went on, and so Greg Berhalter says, well, you know, if everyone liked it so much, why don't we just drop it twice? And everyone kind of looked at each other like, that's a good point, Greg. And then afterwards, as the discussion happened, I mentioned to him, I was like, you know, you just gave us a hashtag. And I think he got it, but he didn't see the funniness in it, because he's a very serious man. But it took off.
He wouldn't let us use 3G, but he's letting you do Drop It Twice.
He named it, man.
He's letting you use Drop It Twice.
That's the name. He gave us the name of that song, Drop It Twice. And Morgan Hughes took off with it. Erica Kress, I think, sort of thought it was a great idea because she's a marketing whiz. And so there you have it. And so we discussed it at the supporter section. We all listened to it a couple times. And I think everyone liked it. And I think it's going to become a part of us. And it's very nice, very good job by everybody who's involved in it. And especially Greg.
And I know for a fact that Andy Lamborghini listens to the show every single week because he's told a couple people this at this point. But Andy, we'd love to do a world premiere of Drop It Twice. Just putting that out there. I think we should use it as a bump. I think we should get it before the season starts, and we should use it as a bump. So that's me putting that out there. We'll see what happens on that. The crew travel to Florida. There's another match already on Wednesday. The preseason really ramping up, and you know, another, what is it, the IMG Suncoast Pro Classic. Which, can you name something that happened if it's for, it's in the first year? Can you name it a classic?
Yeah, apparently you can. Coca-Cola Classic, IMG Suncoast Pro Classic, I guess.
So
complete parallels.
Yeah, yeah. That's the only classic I can think of.
So the crew have a match, and Justin, you and I are going to have to take a long lunch on Wednesday.
Yeah.
The crew have a match at noon on Wednesday against TP Mazembe out of the Congo. Yeah. You just perked up.
TP Mazembe is kind of a storied team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't they have, like, one of the best African players of all time play for them or something?
I believe they did.
I can't remember what his name was, but I thought they had some sort of like legendarily good African player in like the 50s or the 60s. Well, that's the only thing I know about him. I could be totally wrong.
Well, one of the things that I really remember from them is back when Inter played in the World Football the World Cup of Club World Club Cup.
Yeah. World Cup.
Thank you, Greg. The CWC. the good old CWC Classic.
Club World Classic.
Yeah. When Inter played them, the team that they played in the final was TP Mazembe, who were the champions of Africa at the time, of the African Federation. That's the only thing I really know about them.
I just know that they play in the Congo. I'm actually trying to look up that that guy's name here real quick. TP Mazembe, formerly known as Engelbert. That was
is
the
it Engelbert or Engelbrot?
Engelbert.
Engelbert?
Engelbert. Yeah.
Engelbert.
Like Engelbert Humperdinck.
Yeah. Wow.
United.
I have the link for the supporters summit. It'll be in our
Lesbian Seagull.
Oh yeah, what is the apparently. Yeah, let's plug that real quick and I'll as soon as we I'll get this as soon as
I can't really plug it. I'll put the link.
We'll just put the link in the description of the podcast.
If you go to YouTube and you type in Columbus Crew Supporters Summit.
It's like the first one that comes up.
Yeah, it'll come up. It's under look, it's under Morgan Hughes' YouTube page. Just ignore all of the...
Yeah, please ignore everything else.
Ignore all of the My Little Pony videos.
Care Bears.
That's frightening.
And as always, don't read the comments.
so yeah, it's... I'm not finding the guy's name, so we'll just go on from there. Although, FC Engelbert, the reason they were named that, they were named after their sponsor, a tire company. So a little interesting Congo trivia for you. Also appearing in this tournament, 2:30, the Union play the U23 Costa Rican national team.
That's the Philadelphia Union,
not crew
Union. Supporters Union.
No,
right.
No. New York Red Bulls play Koge, HB Koge, coach from Denmark. And Toronto FC play the Oklahoma City Energy. And then the crew Saturday, February 21st, play the under-23 Costa Rican national team. I'll be in Vegas, so I'll see if there's a betting line on that. I did want to bring this up, and that's our good segue into that, the crew right now picked 15-1 odds to win the MLS Cup. I'll be in Vegas this weekend, so if anybody would like me to put down bets, just let me know ahead of time.
We should point out that if you're not living in Nevada, the 15 to 1 is for entertainment purposes only.
Yeah.
By the way, you should point out that at that 15 to 1 is TFC, NYCFC, and New York Red Bulls.
Really?
At that same 15 to 1.
Wow, Vegas seems to think that we're not that good. Although the Impact are 50 to 1. So Ryan Gear said, because he's going with me, he may be putting down $10 on the Impact to win.
Sporting Kansas City is 20 to 1. Just
wow. Vancouver is 30 to 1. Now, if I was a betting person, I would put money on Vancouver.
Yeah.
I think they have a real outside shot.
Yeah. I'd put 10 on Columbus, and I'd put 10 on Red Bull. Although Red Bull
Without Henri, are they really?
To win the cup.
Without Henri, without Cahill, without.
I know, but they're gonna bring somebody in the summer. They're gonna have to. They're gonna get somebody good.
Yeah, but then they won't coalesce until September.
By that time, they might be so far down that no matter what
they don't have Petke though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Why'd you fire Petke?
Answer the question.
Can I mention something? You know, you were talking about the preseason and Toronto FC, and I don't know if we mentioned this last week. TFC played a high school team.
Oh yes, can we talk about this?
In their first scrimmage.
What happened, Justin? Tell us more about this.
Yes,
game.
Tell us more about this.
Well, apparently, this high school team is quite good. If you listen to what MLS is saying,
okay.
apparently, they were also quite fit.
They were definitely match fit.
Tell us more. I want to hear
the
more.
The team is Monteverde Academy, and they played in Orlando a couple weeks ago. And if you go and you look at the highlights, you'll see that the Monteverde Academy, a high school team. Did I mention that they're a high school team? scored twice on Toronto FC of Major League Soccer. Yeah.
Who came up with this idea?
Justin?
What'd you say?
Did Toronto FC score?
They did. They scored four.
Oh, okay.
So they really put it to them.
It was
them.
Almost a letdown. I was expecting like one.
No,
nil.
The third, I think the quote from the article is, third round pick Michael Ramos added an insurance marker.
All right.
Right at the death. Accepting another solid pass from Chapman to give the Reds a 4-2 win. So
4-2 is a great score. They're playoff bound for sure.
Yeah, it's really
postseason form.
Look, it's great that they added that insurance goal at 90th minute.
It would have
sucked.
The
90th minute. Can I just interrupt this? Just for anybody who watched Seinfeld and what remembers the episode where Kramer is taking karate lessons against all these kids and he's kicking the crap out of them and bragging about how excellent he is. That's what I have in mind when I think of Toronto adding an insurance marker against Monteverde Academy.
Who in the Toronto FC front office thought this was a good idea?
The person who thought they were going to win like 20-0.
Still!
But insurance is actually kind of a fair thing, because if you think about it, can you imagine what would have happened if they would have gone to Pens against a freaking high school team, if they would have made it 3-3?
One of the things that I thought was really funny about it was that after this all happened, people were saying, look, this is a high school team. And people were like, no, they're really, really good. They're like a college team.
really good.
They're almost a college
team. That's what they were saying. They're almost a college team. Monteverde Academy.
Well, they are almost a college team. Like, give them a couple years and the kids will be in college.
It's really good.
I thought it was weird when we'd schedule like those bi-week friendlies at the beginning, those closed-door bi-week friendlies
against universities.
Like, but it was against like West Virginia or Marshall or something like that.
And those are also really fun. Like, I remember some of the times, and you know that the teams, they're learning. It's like preseason plus, right? And so, like, they would have these three-way friendlies against like Michigan State or Notre Dame or Marshall or somebody like that.
Yeah.
And that was fun because you could see like a lot of the guys playing and just trying to get runs under their legs, basically.
Yeah.
But they never played played DeSales. They never, it's like, hey, Bishop Watterson, we're not going
to
play
the Whetstone Junior Varsity team is coming into Crew Stadium to prove a point.
Yeah. It's Columbus Academy. They're almost like a college.
They have open recess and everything. Yeah.
Can't wait for TFC to bid like $13 million a season for like one of those like 15-year-old kids who like really impressed them.
Yeah,
our probably fifth DP is this kid, and his mom will be driving him to the stadium every week.
One of the kids is gonna like think that he's being drawn to an MLS club in a blind envelope draw, and it's just his report card.
Wow!
All right, so we're gonna come back next week. Probably make fun of Toronto FC for getting two goals scored on them against a high school team, or against a high school team again.
It's the middle school.
The middle school. Yeah, the middle school team that they play. Well, they
They're
do
almost
play.
In high school.
They're almost. They, They do play the Oklahoma City Energy on Wednesday, so we'll see how that one turns out. And then they play that team from Denmark, who might be a high school team. I've never heard of them. Are they a high school team? I'm just asking questions, Justin.
I don't know.
I'm just asking questions.
Matt, it's actually a typo on that. It's not Coge, it's Doge FC. It's like many it's, goals, much insurance.
It's wow. just a team full of dogs. All right. Well, let's put this thing to bed. For Ken, who was here during the second segment, thank you very much, by the way, to him for coming in.
Thanks,
very
Ken.
Very insightful information about the CBA. We'll be having him back on. For Sam, coming out of retirement, turning the gears.
By the way, I thought Kanye's set was pretty good last night. I really did. I enjoyed it. That was cool.
For interjecting Justin
Serious.
Bell. Alex Stanek, Greg Benson. My name is Matt Gosher. This has been the Massive Report. A lot of people like snow. I find it to be an unnecessary freezing of water.
Good night, everybody.